I could meet some, I could meet women like this, like in that like split second, I could be like, yeah, no problem. I'll share my bank details with you. My romantic attraction to men is very much, I'm, you know, like, you know, slap me. And then I'll be like, who taught you how to hit your husband?
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Life of Bi. Absolutely thrilled you've come back for another dose of bisexual angst. I'm Elle Potter.
And I'm Mary Higgins. And this episode is just a little fella.
Just a quickie. Won't take long, don't worry.
We simply had to dedicate an entire half of an episode to Samantha Sun.
Who you heard a bit from last episode. Sin and Shame? Ring any bells?
Samantha describes herself as a Chinese-Canadian circus performer, aerialist, activist, stripper, and bisexual.
Well, actually, she says,
I don't really like labels. I call myself gay all the time, but like, I still resentfully fuck men sometimes. So I guess that's what bi is.
Samantha is part of the Pan-Asian drag collective, The Bitten Peach.
Named after the ancient Chinese legend about Mitzi Sha, who offered the duke he loved a delicious peach. Remember? It's a great story. Written, if you can cast your minds back, in 493 BCE.
It is both my honor and privilege to present to you the Bitten Peach family.
Anyway, Samantha had little to no connection with the legend. She'd never even heard of it before she joined the Bitten Peach.
Believe it or not, I'm like quite far removed from a lot of, I'd say, like Chinese history for like two reasons. A, I was raised in the West. And B, I'm like Hong Kong Chinese, not like mainland Chinese. So like, I actually wasn't exposed to it that much. So the Bitten Peach is how I found out about this legend.
On her Instagram, Samantha often talks about the fact that her sex work requires her to perform Asian stereotypes. We wondered if her Chinese heritage actually influences her sexuality in any way.
It does in a lot of ways, and I don't think I can escape from them. I don't think they're things that need to be escaped from. I didn't really feel this in Toronto. I grew up in a very Asian community here, so like for me, it's very like being Asian here is just being normal. But like when I went to London, I moved there at 18. Other people made me feel more Asian because I'm, for some people, their only Asian friend, which is bananas to me.
So Samantha stuck out a bit more in London than she was used to back home.
But sticking out doesn't always have to be a bad thing.
So like this idea and this image of like what is stereotypically sexually attractive for Asian women is not something I asked for, but it's something that was put onto me. And then I learned very quickly that you could profit off of it. So I started using this to my advantage at a strip club at the age of 19. This is like your formative years, right? So like this, and then compounded with all the like, I only know how to be gay in like a, I'm going to give a lesbian show away, is kind of, it massively affects like my personal life.
I think there is always some sort of performative aspect mm-hmm. to sex. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because there's a kind of transformation that happens.
Yeah.
And it's kind of innate.
Yeah. But I also think it's probably important to be able to not perform. Mm. And like sometimes it takes years, like years and years to actually let go of that when you want to, when it would be good to.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying that as people who mainly discovered our sexuality in private.
Yes, and it must be a very different thing. The nature of performativity is very different if you're doing a performance in your private life to performing your sexuality on a literal stage.
But like, I don't have a roadmap for what like my interactions with women might look like if no one's watching, which is really sad. And then it's not until like, it's not until I've basically done what I think insane people do, which is you just do the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results. And this is how I feel about sleeping with men. I just like kept on doing it. And I was like, I don't like this. Why? Maybe it's the guy. Maybe it's not me. When reality is, if you have like a pufferfish moment where you're like, I don't like this, it's usually not the other person. That's usually a you problem, right? And it took me so long, like literally until like this year to realize, oh, like, I should just have sex with women. I think that maybe is better. And I like it a lot more. Maybe that's what that is. Anyway, that's kind of like the intersection. So it's like more like a Venn diagram of like Asian stereotypes and then a Venn diagram of gay, like lesbian stereotypes. And that the little crossover is like me.
Strangely, Samantha's was really the only interview where we waded into the male gaze, like, at all.
Yeah, I expected to come up a lot more.
Yeah, because we basically concluded in episode 3 that it was just harder for cis men to be bisexual.
Yeah.
But that doesn't undermine the fact that it's still fucking difficult for literally everybody else yeah. who's bisexual.
Well, sometimes I think it's just hard to be sexual, full stop.
Mm.
Like, particularly if you're femme presenting. But then again, I don't know if anyone is born sexually free. Well, no, I think you are born sexually free.
And then life fucks you up.
Honestly, my hetero experience was pretty much all performative for like the male gaze. I've never been given a roadmap for what like it should look like if no one else was watching, because everyone has been watching my entire life and everyone is still watching and they will watch until I no longer look like this. And I'm Asian, so I'm going to look like this till I'm 50.
So we spent a lot of time on Samantha's Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
Basically just drinking in how much of a fucking goddess she is.
You fancy her?
Yes, I did. And so did you.
Yeah, okay. It's true. It's true. Samantha posted a series of photos where she poses nude with an octopus. A real life octopus.
A real dead octopus.
We wanted to ask you, but you had like a series of nude octopus photos on your Instagram. Which we thought were referencing Dream of a Fisherman's Wife, that
oh God,
Japanese
yeah.
erotic painting.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, good. Just checking.
Dream of the Fisherman's Wife, by the way, is a Japanese woodblock print made around 1814 by Katsushika Hokusai.
The fisherman's wife is lying on her back and an octopus is going down on her.
Not just one octopus, Elle. There's a little one on her face, fingering her nipples.
We can talk about it. Do you want to talk about how much I love octopuses, or do you want to talk about the references in those photos? We can do both.
Let's do both.
So tentacle porn is very obviously like Japanese and like anime and hentai, which by the way is fucking amazing. Like, I do not judge you if you watch hentai, because I watch it too. It's great, okay?
Hentai is a genre of pornographic Japanese manga and anime.
It's sort of the great-great-great-great-grandchild of Dream of the Fisherman's Wife.
Also, it's nice because as a gay person, you can then watch like this animated, sexy, like hot, big-titted whore get fucked by something that's not a dick. So like a tentacle is a fabulous like alternative. It's a phallic object that's kind of nasty, but it's not a dick. So it's not gendered. So I don't get like upset by it. But that is like the actual reason for that is that after World War II, or actually during the American occupation.
America occupied Japan after the Second World War from 1945 till 1952.
With backup from the British Commonwealth.
Never willingly uninvolved.
The Allied powers wanted to make sure that Japan would never pose such a military threat again. So the first port of call was abolishing the armed forces and introducing a democratic parliament. There's something very fishy about forcibly imposing democracy, though.
Mm. Along with democracy came some, on the face of it, wholesome reforms, like women were given equal rights and there was supposedly freedom of speech.
But in reality, the US kept a strict hold on the press, especially when it came to porn.
So, like, before the Americans, like, got their hands on Japan, they used to be, like, really, really, like, open and, like, censorship wasn't a thing. Like these like woodblock prints that are like erotic art or like softcore porn, it's just art that people like had. It was super normal. Like it wasn't really taboo. Then the Americans came and like imposed all their like Puritan values on them, and then as like a whole entire monolith, like all of East Asia like just suffered from this fucking amnesia like over like the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s as they started to get economically more robust. I just wanted to have proximity to the Western culture because, like, that's, like, the top. Like, if you can reach that, like, you've made it, basically. Anyway, what comes with this is also their censorship laws. So Japan still has some incredibly strict censorship laws. Like, you cannot publish – it's, like, illegal to publish porn that doesn't have blurred out genitalia. One of the ways to get around this, right, is instead of having an actual penis, you substitute with phallic objects and, again, tentacles.
People are just never not going to wank, ever.
Yeah, and porn has been around forever.
Porn will never die. I mean, like, it's like watching the evolution of an incredibly intelligent animal that keeps adapting every 5 seconds.
Yeah, like, have you seen any COVID porn?
Yes, I have, actually.
What was it?
It was called, it was by X Confessions. Uh-huh. It was called Quarantine Quartet.
Oh, sounds very dignified, like a chamber concert.
Well, X Confessions is pretty dignified. It was like 4 different videos of people wanking on quarantine.
I meant more like rubbish porn. That's
Pornhub.
Like, quarantine nurse accidentally gives me a blowjob.
What's a quarantine nurse?
Like, she's wearing a mask.
Difficult to give a blowjob.
Very good point.
Oh, the point is, sexuality is highly adaptable and will always find a way.
I personally love octopuses. Like, I have a tattoo of one. I've spent a lot of time reading a lot of books about one. I would like to quit my life and then just scuba dive indefinitely and, like, make friends with octopuses. They are, like, they're so, so, so interesting, and they're so smart. And what they represent to me is, like, a diverging intelligence and being able to understand what life might look like for something so different. They experience life so differently. We cannot even begin to, like, comprehend with our, like, tiny human minds what that looks like. Like, two-thirds of all their nerve endings are in their arms. So effectively, they think with their arms. They can also taste everything they touch. Like, that is how they interact with the world. Fucking imagine tasting everything you touch. What a nightmare. I would hate that. But that's how they like interact with the world. That's kind of how they work. And that, and on top of, like, that, with, like, how they're, like, how they move and, like, how they look. They're very, like, alien and, like, squidgy and, like, kind of, they're soft but also very, very scary, very, very strong, and very, very, I guess, they spark a lot of fear, I think, within the human psyche because of how different they are. All of that is very sexy.
Did you see my octopus teacher?
You have an octopus teacher?
No, you know what I'm talking about, Netflix thing.
No, I've heard of it, yeah.
Okay, do you know what it's about, though?
I mean, presumably an octopus.
No, it's better than that. This guy, who, I think he's a bit depressed. Anyway, he...
Oh.
Yeah, it's sad.
Derailed.
Anyway, he starts going to the sea every day and he meets this octopus. And then he decides to see her every day. And it's sort of like watching a relationship develop. And it's very romantic. And there are these moments where he's holding the octopus in his hand and, like, it's very, I wouldn't say it's tentacle porn, but it's definitely tentacle intimacy.
Maybe Samantha needs to meet this guy.
I think they need to
Maybe
meet.
They're meant for each other.
I'm not saying I have a sexual attraction to octopuses, okay? I'm just saying that, like, there's something there and we could all learn a thing or two. And that I don't mind being naked with one. Like, we're not going to get into bestiality here or anything, but I don't mind being naked with an octopus for artistic purposes.
Yeah, last time I was in counselling, she did this thing where she got me to pick elements of my current emotional state from a lineup of toys, of, like, figurines. And I picked, like, a rat, a lion, and an octopus.
What did the octopus represent, Mary?
Well, Elle, the octopus was my sexuality, my private sexuality. The rat was my, like, public sexuality.
Right.
And the octopus was meant to be my sort of truest, wisest, gentlest self with many limbs.
For me, it's less about the octopus itself as, like, an actual animal and more about the symbolism and what they like their how they got here basically and what that represents. Cephalopods all have shells for protection because they're gelatinous little bodies, right? But imagine carrying around your fucking condo with you everywhere you go. It's shit for movement. It's terrible. So the octopus has evolved so that they can have full freedom. Their beaks, which are made of cartilage, not bone, cartilage, are like the size of like a quarter. I guess for you, like a 2-pound coin. That's the size. So as long as any crevice is that small, they can fit inside it. That's fucking bananas. That's mind-blowing. But that means that they're incredibly vulnerable. And so in order for them to survive and continue the species' existence, they have had to evolve.
We didn't expect Samantha to have such esoteric knowledge of octopuses.
No, we were listening being like, wow, this is great. Like, we weren't moving. But we were also thinking, this just can't go in because what do octopuses have to do with bisexuality?
But then
they have to, like, basically outsmart everything around them. And I love that. I love that. And I think I would love to apply that to my own life because I think the price you do pay for freedom is being incredibly vulnerable and incredibly, like just exposed to the world and having zero stability and not really knowing where you're going to get your next meal. And it's just something that like I associate with being like an artist, a performer, and a sex worker, because like truly the whole world is against you and you can't just carry around your stupid ass shell all the time. And so the price I pay for this freedom is like being vulnerable all the time. And I only can hope to be smart enough to survive the big blue. And so, yeah, that's why I like octopuses.
Next time on Life of Bi.
So I called myself bisexual for a while, but what I found out was that there were no bars I could go to. I couldn't pick anybody up. Nobody would kiss me.
Any woman who takes part in a heterosexual couple helps to shore up male supremacy by making its foundations stronger.
Every year, millions and millions of pictures are made of women with our legs spread. We're called beaver, we're called pussy. Millions and millions of pictures are made of us in postures of submission and sexual access.
But it would still be another 5 or 6 years before I actually found out what clits were and where they were.
I just want to say,
and it ain't over till the bisexual speak.